thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com. This is IMSA Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to another one of our 2020 series reviews, except not just one series here, it's three for the price of one as we look at the IMSA Challenger series. Coming up we'll be taking a look at the final ever Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge USA by Yokohama. We'll have a little squiz at the IMSA Prototype Challenge, but we'll be starting off with the Lamborghini Super Trofeo, and we'll have news of a couple of new series for 2021. You'll be delighted to know that you don't have to put up with me droning away about this in the show, because we have once again our IMSA Radio team, our VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock Reporter Shea Adam, and my co-commentator in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, Jeremy Shaw. Shea, hello.
Hello.
Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And Jeremy, hello to you, whatever time it
Ditto.
Is.
Ditto. Yes. Ditto from California.
Yes. Jeremy, let's start with Lamborghini, the Super Trofeo, Squadra Corsa Super Trofeo. 10 rounds were managed in some way, shape or form to be squeezed in. Double headers at 5 venues. As we've said through all of these shows, excellent work by everybody concerned to get that done. We often mention that the Lamborghini Super Trofeo Evos, as they are now, are quite hairy, quite noisy, and very quick indeed. Pretty much always entertaining as well, to be fair. Has it been a decent year?
Well, it has, all things considered. You know, numbers were respectable. It started off fairly quietly at Road America. There were only a dozen cars for that race, but it quickly ramped up to 16, and it was looking better and better through the season. But new teams coming on board, and you know, a lot of interest being shown for 2021 as well. The only races that weren't run this year was the international aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, the Lamborghini Super Trofeos from Asia, from Europe, and from North America will convene for one World Finals, which is a different track around the world each year. That didn't happen this year, but everything else did. It was a really good season.
Shea, I always feel that we've slightly shortchanged the public not having them at most of the events, or at least not having big crowds at most of the Lamborghini events, because of the sights and sounds that they produce. It's a good-looking paddock as well, and with the element, and we'll talk about this when we go through the multitude of championships that they are within the field, there's a dealer element as well, so there's, you know, if you've got a local round and there's a dealer there, they tend to bring people up. It's a decent package for a very powerful and very evocative two-wheel drive mid-engine supercar.
It really is. And especially when you look at the calendar that they did get in this year, okay, it's not the one that they had initially announced, but they went to Road America, VIR, Michelin Raceway, Road Atlanta, WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca, and then finally rounding out the season at Sebring International Raceway. I can't think of another racetrack that I would want to take a Lamborghini Super Trofeo to. That's a pretty phenomenal schedule, all in all.
No, they did a very good job. Brian Till, Jeremy and Shea have all commentated, and I think I jumped in as well at various stages. We've all commentated on these cars. The standard explainer, Jeremy, is that the cars are all the same. The classes are based on driver ability, and some of those drivers, and how much experience the drivers have got. And some of those drivers have very little experience indeed for the performance of these cars. And that's where the LB Cup comes in, with 6 point scoring drivers this year, although not all full season entries to the LB Drivers Cup.
No, and for somebody new to the sport, boy, what an introduction these cars are. 650 horsepower, you name it, they've got it. I mean, they are fast. And yeah, the LB Cup is for drivers basically new to the sport. There's a few sort of outliers in there as well. The champion from this year, he's been doing this now for a couple of years or so. It's very much for amateur drivers. That's what the LB Cup is all about.
And the driver you mentioned, who pretty much dominated, full 50 points on the field or thereabouts, was Randy Solari, who headed the championship table ahead of Sidney McKee and Matt Dickon. Those were your top three. Although, in fairness, Matt was pushed pretty hard at the end, just taking third spot in the championship from John Hennessy by a point. Does that accurately represent, Jeremy, the way the LB Cup went this year, or was it just the fact that Randy was at all the races? Although I do note Sydney was at all the races as well.
Yeah, that's right. Matt Dickon had to miss one round, and so did John Hennessy, missed the final two races at Sebring. Yeah, Randy Solari, he was the most experienced of the drivers in. Well, he and Matt Dickon have both got a fair amount of experience in all sorts of different cars. John Hennessy, he was probably the standout in LB Cup. He had absolutely zero racing experience prior to this year. Joined the US Racetronics team, and was super fast. When he started off with a couple of second place finishes, but he was always right there and thereabouts. He took it very, very seriously. He actually didn't race at VIR, which is the second round of the championship, although he was credited with points there, and he also didn't turn up for Sebring. So even with all of that, he finished just 1 point behind Matt Dickon in the standings, and Matt was at all but two of the races. So, you know, John was fast. He had several pole positions, had a couple of wins, and it could have been much better. And you know, if he'd have been able to do all the races, he certainly would have pushed Randy Solari from Change Racing very hard for that LB Cup title. Sidney McKee, you know, she's brand new to the sport, and gradually gained in experience through the season. She took one win at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. It was kind of handed to her in some respects because of the timing of a safety car period. But you know, she picked up pace as the year went on, and it was a really good first season for Sidney McKee. She was driving for the Prestige Performance Wayne Taylor Racing team.
Before we move on to the other driver championships, that's a good point. We should talk about the team championship standing as well. Prestige Performance, Wayne Taylor finished in third on 245 points. US Racetronics, who've been in this championship for as long as I can remember, were second with 300 points. And at the top, Change Racing share, 362 points. That looked fairly dominating.
Spoiler alert, they won every championship. Change Racing had pretty much a dream season as far as that's concerned. But the interesting thing that really reflects when you look on the points table, there was only one race where they took all four of the possible pole positions, and that was at the first round at Road America. After that, they had races where certain drivers were stronger than others. Yep, can be said for sure. But at the end of the day, they came home with a large advantage over some of the competition, who also were running, maybe not as frequently, but as many cars as they did. So it really was a good season for Keith and Eddie and all the Change Racing guys.
They are a pretty solid outfit, Jeremy. And let's be fair, when we go through the other drivers' championship, they had some good drivers on board with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's been a total of 92 races since the Lamborghini Super Trofeo was introduced to North America in 2013. Change Racing has won 23 of them.
Wow.
The points this season for the team and dealer championships were different to how they've been in the past. And they were kind of weighted towards this year for the first time. towards the teams that were able to compete in all four different classes. That's the main reason Change Racing won the team's championship, because that was the only team that was represented at all races in all of the classes. But it was, you know, that's not to say it wasn't well deserved, because it certainly was well deserved.
I take it that as well affected the dealer championship as well, which I really like. This is a throwback for me to things I've seen in other manufacturer championships in the past, where dealer support has been very important to some of the cars and names on the side of the cars. It gives them a different identity. It was Charlotte from Paramus from Broward, the top three there, and that points scoring situation, Jeremy, affected that one as well.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, the thing about the Wayne Taylor Racing teams, or the Prestige Performance, I should say, which is run by Wayne Taylor Racing and Change Racing, they were representing all of their cars, were representing just one dealer. For Prestige Performance, it was a Paramus in New Jersey, and other places, and for Change Racing, it was a Charlotte dealership in North Carolina, whereas US Racetronics, all of their cars were representing different dealers. So that's you know, one of the factors that played in there for the dealer championship for sure. But again, you know, Charlotte and Change Racing, you know, they had a tremendous commitment to the series and ended up with the championship titles.
Well, we mentioned the LB Cup. That's for new drivers to motor racing. The other championships sound more usual and a bit more familiar. AM drivers eight drivers scoring points there. Victor Gomez taking the top spot there, Shea, comprehensively, because... frankly, he was, I think, the only one who did every single race, didn't he?
He was. And it's an interesting situation here for Victor. He took every pole position as well, except for the two at VIR and then the first race at Sebring. But Victor, in the preseason testing, which took place in July, go figure, Victor was actually scheduled to run in Pro-Am alongside Corey Lewis. The team elected to place Victor into his own car in his own category in Am, because they figured it would give him a better shot at race wins and perhaps fair competition. They didn't realize that there would be no one else running an AM at the time. They had been told there would be more competition. So for Victor's credit, you can only race who turns up. That's exactly what he did. He got better as the year went on, improving his lap times. And by the end of the season, he was more competitive toward the Pro-Am drivers than he was the LB Cup drivers. So that was a year of progress for Victor.
And we should point out, Jeremy, actually, that in LB Cup and the AM Driver Championship, you can still drive as a solo driver, whereas in the classes at the sharp end of the field, it has to be two drivers now.
Well, yeah, that actually rule was relaxed this year
because of the
COVID situation. I mean, that definitely took away a whole bunch of cars that had been intending to run the whole championship. As Shea was saying, there were certainly several other AM drivers that were planning to come in, but yeah, as you say, Victor Gomez, he was the only omnipresent through the season. In fact, nobody else competed more than one weekend in AM this season. Lance Wilsey was quick when he turned up for the second weekend of the season at VII. As Shea was saying, he took the pole position in each of those two races. Actually, didn't even start the second race because of an incident in the first one. He was quick. And then at the final round of the season at Sebring, Moritz Kranz came over from Germany to drive alongside Tom Kerr for TPC Racing. And TPC Racing, brand new to the championship this year. They didn't compete in the first race of the season, but did everyone thereafter with Tom Kerr, who, like the team, was stepping up from the Porsche GT3 Cup Series. And Tom, for that final round, was stepping up from LB Cup to drive in the AM category with Moritz, who has a lot of experience in all sorts of different cars, mainly GT4 cars in Europe. And it was Moritz Kranz who put that car on pole position for the first of the two races at Sebring. It was Victor who ended up winning the races quite comfortably, but that's primarily because Tom, you know, doesn't have anything like the experience that Victor Gomez has. And Victor Gomez, the fourth from Puerto Rico, drove, as Shane was saying, very well this season. But he has a fair amount of experience. He's done at least a couple of years in the Porsche GT3 Cup Series before stepping up to the Lamborghinis.
And do we know if Tom's toe in the water of Pro-Am is as a prelude to 2021?
Yeah, in the AM category. No, he's...
in AM category, yes.
Certainly for the team, yes. The team is now fully committed to the Lamborghini Super Trofeo North America. They ran a second car in the final couple of races with Scott Smith and Trevor Andrusko joining in. And Scott Smith did some racing about 20 years ago in the old Panos Racing Challenge, if you remember that.
I do.
One make series. For Trevor Andrusko, he's been a driver coach for a lot of years, hasn't really done much pro racing, but I'll tell you what, he was quick. So they got bumped up immediately from LB Cup in the first weekend, which they did, which is at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, up into AM for the second round. And he was very, very competitive. So Trevor Andrusko and Scott Schmidt definitely will be contenders to watch in 2021.
Let's move on to the Pro-Am Championship then, and a little closer this one as far as the points were concerned, Jeremy.
A lot closer, yes. And this one, there was a three-car battle all the way through the year with a fourth car coming in after the first round, and each of them won races. So it was very, very competitive indeed. Corey Lewis and McKay Snow, by far the most experienced drivers in this class. Well, I guess Andrea Amici's got a lot of experience as well. But Corey Lewis, he's a former multiple-time champion in pro, let alone pro-am. So he and McKay Snow, the younger of the Snow brothers, ended up winning not comfortably at the end. They only ended up 5 points ahead of the Brazilian Leo Lamelas, who is moving into Lamborghinis this year after a pretty solid year or so in the prototype challenge. So a big change for Leo Lamelas, but he did a good job driving for that US Racetronics team.
Yes, did a very good job, and only 5 points in the end. Andrea Amici and Ashton Harrison in third place share another 14 points further back. And then a variety of people who did some, but not all of the races, including, in fact, I might as well give them all a mention. Danny Formal, Patrick Otto Madsen, Eric Curran and William Hubble were at the end of the season. A solid, solid season, though, for Andrea and Ashton in third position.
It was. It definitely wasn't what they set out to accomplish. And they were helped in the fact that, in speaking of relaxing of the rules, as Jeremy mentioned, with the singleton drivers versus duo drivers, there was another allowance made where if you didn't show up for a race weekend or if you weren't able to start a race, you still scored points, which is not what typically happened for Super Trofeo. They had a crash in practice before the VIR first race, and they were actually unable to participate in that race. So if you take away that 8 points that they scored for that round one, they were able to get a car for the second round where they did score a podium. That puts them much closer to Danny Formal, who did not run two rounds of the championship this year, but he himself was impressive. Andrea and Ashton did manage to get a race win, though, at Sebring. So they'll take that momentum going forward. And although we haven't heard their plans yet for 2021, we do know that Ashton will be back in the Lamborghini in some way, shape or form.
And as far as the Pro Driver Championship for Lamborghini Super Trofeo, Jeremy, just 17 points over the top three crews, four drivers in that. And that was a decent, not the biggest field we've seen in that class, but it kept us interested right to the end of the season.
Yeah, there were four cars that did the whole season, and a fifth one just missed one of the races. But just a quick shout out back to Pro-Am for a moment for Danny Formal, a youngster from Puerto Rico who was an absolute star in the karting ranks, has been for many, many years. And he finally got an opportunity this year to drive in a professional car racing series for the first time. And I tell you what, he was outstanding.
Want to watch,
Jeremy?
We're
going to be hearing a lot more from Danny Formal in the years to come.
Want to watch then.
Absolutely one to watch. But yeah, in Pro Series, it ended up being a tremendous battle between, between Change Racing and US Racetronics, with Madison Snow prevailing by just 3 points over Stephen Argacani and Jacob Edson. The latter pair were definitely the quickest on the season. They had pole in six of the 10 races, and definitely the fastest car. But the inexperience of Stephen Argucani, I think, was probably really what cost them the championship. So Madison Snow, with all of his time in these cars in the past, was able to come away quite comfortably. Well, not comfortably, certainly, but he was able to take that championship, but by just 3 points in the end. He had a fairly conservative final couple of races at Sebring, because by then he knew what he had to do. Just a third place finish was going to be enough for him to win the championship, and he comfortably accomplished that.
Yeah, and Brian Sellers got a penalty, of course, that cost them a few points in one of the earlier rounds. Shout out for Brandon Godovic, Jeremy, and Shea. Let's go to Shea on this one. In third position, just another 14 points further back. Brandon's name has been associated with Super Trofeo for a little while now, but he again gave a good account of himself in 2020.
Yeah, and Brandon's points don't actually tell the full story of his season, because he was on the pole position at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca for the first race. The crew forgot to fuel the car, he was only able to go a few laps. Wound up finishing with last place points. Well, that very easily could have been a race win for Brandon. He was very much the quickest car on the track that whole weekend. So if you give him the points for that one, you're then looking at a real street fight between Godovic, Agacani, and Edson for that second place. And Godovic is one of those people that still works on his own car. He still pushes the car through tech. So he's somebody that I feel at the end of this season, the third place doesn't exactly justify the amount of effort that he and his team gave.
Solid fourth place for Stephen McAleer and Stuart Middleton, Jeremy, in the pro ranks on 96 points. A season, they were the full season entries as well. A season perhaps of what might have been.
Slightly disappointing, I think, for Prestige Performance, Wayne Taylor racing there, because Stuart Middleton, he's one of the Lamborghini young drivers from the UK, former champion in the British GT Championship. He's a youngster, just 21 years of age, from your neck of the woods, up in the northeast of England.
Correct, yeah.
Very talented young man. So it was a little bit disappointing to end up only fourth in the points without a single win. They only had a couple of second place finishes. They had four thirds, but they were certainly disappointed not to end up the year with at least one win.
Congratulations then to the winners in class teams and the dealer championship. The Lamborghinis, always a crowd favourite, as we mentioned. We're looking back on the 2020 season for the IMSA Challenger Championships. And let's move now to the Prototype Challenge. LMP3, a single category of car, as has been for a wee while now. A mix of races. We did have, again, Jeremy, the longer race at the Raw, which people seem to like. And as far as the championships are concerned, we have driver, team, and do we have a Masters Championship in this? Yes, we do, don't we?
The Bronze Cup.
Yes, the Bronze Cup. Well, let's start there, shall we, and congratulate Stephen Thomas, who won out with 194 points over 170 points in second for Keith Grant and David Grant. And then it was Paul LaHaye in third position. Before we talk about that specifically, Jeremy, IMSA Prototype Challenge, the cars look and sound great. They've got that deep throaty V8 engine, which was nominated actually as one of the power units of the year our midweek motorsport end of year show. It's been a difficult year for everybody with the external situation. Happy with what we saw this year for Prototype Challenge? It is proving itself on the stepping stone to WeatherTech Prototype Racing, this championship.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, next year LMP3 will be incorporated in the WeatherTech series, and you know, that's sort of kind of been brewing now for a few years, and it's a tremendous stepping stone. These cars are, you know, in terms of value for money, hard to beat them, quite honestly, in any form of racing. They're solid, they're reliable, they're fast. They're just great tools that drivers have here. And this season definitely was impacted pretty heavily, I think, by the pandemic. We had 18 cars turn up for the first round at Daytona, as you say, a longer distance race there, one of the three-hour races on the calendar. Unfortunately, we dropped down to 13 for Sebring, and for most of the rest of the year, there were sort of 13, 14, 15 cars. So, yeah, I think the pandemic took away at least three or four cars from the full-season programmes, but the racing was good all the way through. Even though the fields might have been somewhat slimmer than we'd anticipated, particularly from the beginning of the year, the racing was absolutely superb.
A chat then about the bronze category. Stephen Thomas, Keith Grant, David Grant and Paul Lahaye, the top three driver crews.
Yeah, and the Grant brothers were very definitely the class of the field in bronze Drivers' Cup, driving... this season they switched teams to be running with the 47 Motorsports team in one of the Norma chassis. The Norma was very much the car to beat this season in the North American edition of LMP3, and that's what they had. And they won four of the six races in the Bronze Cup. Didn't win the first race at Daytona, nor the finale. They both went to the guy who ended up being the champion, who's Stephen Thomas. So the Grants were definitely the fastest early on with their experience. They've been driving in former Atlantic cars primarily for years and years. Lots of championships there, lots of experience, and just loving this LMP3 championship. Stephen Thomas, by contrast, absolutely brand new to the sport.
Yes.
He did a track day in 2019. Loved it. Got hooked up with Ross Bentley, who became his mentor, driver, coach, whatever. And then Stephen hooked himself up with Bobby Golosinski's K2R Motorsports team. He ran the season solo, trying to get as much seat time as he possibly can. And boy, did he take full advantage of it, because by the end of the year, Stephen Thomas was fast.
Did the track day, but he's not a youngster, not in the first flush of youth. You know, he's come into motorsport very, very late, Jeremy.
So he's got a proper life away from motor racing, has Stephen Thomas. He's a lawyer, but a plaintiff's attorney, I think would be the better way to put it. Mm. But he takes his racing now very, very seriously. He's originally from Missouri, Carl Junction, Missouri, now lives in Southern California. And as I can say, takes it very, very seriously. He's out there as much as he can, getting experience in different sorts of cars. And by the end of the season, he was quick for the final round of the season at Road Atlanta. Stephen Thomas qualified on the front row of the grid overall, finished second as well. I mean, it's a remarkable performance for somebody so new to the sport.
And did the Grants not race at the final race of the year at Road Atlanta? Because I see it's a 0 point score. Did they have an issue here?
They actually didn't finish the race. And the way that the Bronze Cup was awarded, it was best points for the best finishing bronze car, in effect. So it had to have only bronze drivers. Then you've got second place and third place, nothing below that.
The
Grant brothers finished 13th on the track. Actually, they didn't finish, which is why they didn't then receive any points.
The reason they didn't score any points in the Bronze Cup per se was because they brought in a third driver for that final round of the season. That being Parker Thompson, who's a very, very talented young Canadian driver who's a rising star, has been now for several years on the road to Indy. And that was the reason they didn't score any points. You don't actually have to cross the finish line to get points in all IMSA races, but because they had the silver driver Parker Thompson join him for that final round, then that took away their opportunity to score any Bronze Cup points. So that is what handed the championship to Stephen Thomas at the end of the day.
Well, let's hope we see some, if not all, of those teams and drivers back from the Bronze Cup. It is a cracking way to go racing. And I've got to be honest, I think that's probably one of the cars I would like to have a go in, having had a little taste of downforce small prototypes last season with the Radical. I kind of think LMP3 is exactly the place I should be stepping up to next in my odd motorsport driving career. At the front part of the field then, lady and gentlemen, the battle was between K2R Motorsport, MLT Motorsports, 47 Motorsports and JDC Motorsports, along with Performance Tech and the second of the K2R cars. I mean, in the midfield, first of all, Jeremy, we should say it was very tight indeed between some of those, actually, names that we all now recognise in the IMSA paddocks.
It was a really good season all the way around, John. We had four different winners from the six rounds, and it was very open competition. The JDC Motorsports team you talked about, they didn't contest the opening round of the season at Daytona. So given the way that how the points are handed out, which is used to be the traditional IMSA system of 35 points for the winner, then 32, 30, 28, 26, then single point differentials down from there, missing a race is cost you massively in terms of the overall championship standings. So that number 9 team for JDC Motorsports, again, it was enormous chassis for Jerry Kraut and Scott Andrews. The first two races they contested this year, which was Sebring and Road America, they won and could easily have added more wins as well before the end of the season. With the way the strategies planned out, they didn't win anymore, but that car was fast every time it was running.
Stephen Thomas, who we mentioned, won the Bronze Cup, Jeremy. I mean, his overall results were good enough to net him sixth in the championship, and he was only 3 points behind Jerry Kraut in fifth.
Yeah, that's right. And again, it was that final race of the season where he was absolutely stellar. I mean, he was running competitive lap times, qualified second, ran second most of the race, actually led a few laps for the first time. Actually, it wasn't the first time. He'd led a lap in the two previous races, but that was really just down to strategy. He stayed out longer than everybody else before making his mandatory pit stop at VIR and at Mid-Ohio. But at Road Atlanta, he was legitimately fast and was running in second place, then took over the lead when the leader made his pit stop. And led convincingly, set some very, very good lap times as well. That leapfrogged him several positions up the championship at that final round. He ended up sixth place in the points at Stephen Thomas.
Jerry Kraut paired with Scott Andrews here. They didn't score at the first round at Daytona, but put together a decent set of scores after that to net them 148 points. Got to wonder what might have happened had they got something from Daytona.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure that they did too as the season went on. But the other thing that comes into play is there was a very weird finish at the Road America round of the championship where there was some confusion as to when the checkered flag was supposed to come out.
Oh,
and so
yes.
Everybody and their sister ran out of gas on the cool down lap, as it effectively became. But that was the final lap of racing as it was. So Scott Andrews was distraught because he came to a stop on the side of the track and then came to realize that, no, he had crossed the line first and had won the race. So that was an interesting result. It then sort of changed things going into VIR and Mid-Ohio a little bit. It was an interesting pan out to the rest of the season. But for Scott Andrews and Gary Kraut both, what a phenomenal advertisement for them, for Jerry to come out and be able to drive the cars as well as he did, and then for Scott to be able to come and be a finisher. It actually allowed Scott to then go and advertise himself on a DPI platform. He wound up getting a ride in one of those with JDC, same team, as the season went on. And now there's rumors swirling that he's going to be back in a DPI for the 24 Hours of Daytona.
So the series absolutely doing its job, Jeremy, in terms of getting people the experience of driving a proper, and they are proper, downforce prototypes, no doubt. Fourth position, 150 points then. Dan Goldberg scored in every round this year and was only a couple of points off third position.
Indeed, and if a few things had fallen his way, he certainly would have been better off than that. For a while there, he was very, very definitely a championship contender. Dan Goldberg started off the season with a co-driver, Blake Mount, who is a lot less experienced than Dan. Dan's been around the sport a long, long time. He was one of the top contenders in the old Prototype Lights Championship a few years ago, then stepped away from the sport, at least at this sort of level. He'd been running BMWs in sort of club championships the last few years, was excited by the LMP3s, came back this year and was quick, you know, did a really, really good job. After Blake Mount stepped aside after he had to miss a couple of races, and then into his place came a very talented youngster by the name of Rasmus Lind, who's originally from Sweden and has been racing in the Road to Indy for the last couple of years, finished second to Carl Kirkwood in both the USF 2000 Championship in 2018 and last year's Indy Pro 2000 Championship. So a really talented young guy. And Rasmus was quick in these cars. They had absolutely no luck, really. They did have a couple of podium finishes, but it could have been so much better for Dan Goldberg and then Rasmus Lind, who joined him for the end. But Daniel had to end up at the end of the season in fourth place in the points. But he and the Performance Tech team, you probably will look back and think, yeah, we could have quite easily done a lot better than that. So it was a good year for Dan Goldberg.
I remember Dan in the old open top IMSA lights. There was one year where he was having a cracking battle, assuming every race with Misha Goikberg, which wasn't at all confusing whilst we were doing the play-by-play on that. The third position then, Joel Janko Shea, 152 points, started the season very well at Daytona.
Yeah, he did. And Joel was one of those guys who came in on a roll, having won the Encore in the LMP3 category as well, alongside his driver coach and longtime co-driver, Jonathan George. They drove together until VIR, where Jonathan stepped out of the car. They wound up getting another podium there, actually. The remainder of the season didn't go very well for Joel. I don't actually have a place written down for him with the finish, but he's shown as 22 points for Mid-Ohio. So not a great finish either from there. But aside from the win and the podium, really was a season to forget for the guy who did so well last year.
Well, yeah, I mean, for Joel, I mean, you know, Joel's into his 70s now. He does this purely for fun. He persuaded Jonathan George to drive with him for the full season. Jonathan's a very reluctant racing driver these days, but he is very talented. But the third driver who joined them is very much a star in the making. That would be Kyle Kirkwood. It was Kyle. He did the final race of the previous season, the Sebring Encore. The three of them won that. They started off this season again with a win at Daytona. Jonathan was quick, but Kyle was super fast. He ended up doing four races this season, set fastest lap in all four of them. Unfortunately, Joel kind of overstepped his mark, if you like, on two or three races, probably cost them better finishes than they would otherwise have got. But still, third place in a championship for Joel with a win represents a tremendous season for him, in my opinion. And at the end of the year, he said, OK, that's it. I'm done with motor racing now. Finally, his wife has won out on that one. But he's a great character, is Joel. He's given a great opportunity there for Carl Kirkwood to make his presence felt at this sort of level in a sports car, having been an absolute stud in open wheel for the last two or three years. So, you know, hats off to Joel Janko. Third place in the championship, excellent effort for him. And, you know, they would certainly have been, you know, they were strong runners all the way through the year. And, you know, they, with one win, was an excellent season for Joel, with that podium also with Carl Kirkwood at Virginia.
This is another championship, Jeremy, where there's a nice mix between people who are still doing their motor racing for the absolute love of the sport, possibly at a slightly more advanced age, and people trying to keep themselves or put themselves in the limelight, maybe learn some new skills, do a bit of endurance racing. Second place, Dakota Dickerson. Great run for Dakota this year. Ultimately came up, 16 points short on the championship. But it was really, I mean, we're still in contention all the way right up until the final race of the season at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta.
They were, and they were, MLT Motorsports. Dakota started off the year driving with Dean Baker from Canada, and then with the COVID restrictions, it made commuting to the race in North America impossible for Dean. So Dakota had to find a new co-driver for the rest of the year. He found that in Dominic Cicero, who's originally from the Pacific Northwest. He's now a driving instructor in Southern California at the Thermal Track, and has been kind of out of this level of racing for a long, long time, but did a really good job all the way through the year. Dakota, he's a young man with a big future in this sport, no question about it. He's a former champion in the open wheel ranks. Is Dakota, is 23 years of age from San Diego, California. And they were flying the Ligier flag against the Norma. The Norma was far and away the quicker car most of the season. And, you know, it's LMP3. The one problem with LMP3 is that it's a homologated car. You can't, the sanction bodies aren't allowed to make any significant changes to bring the Ligier, or weren't able to make the Ligier competitive with a Norma, other than what IMSA did for several of the races. Because the Norma had a significant straight-line speed advantage, it was much fleeter through the air than the Ligier, IMSA allowed the Ligier teams to run a smaller rear wicker, little bit less drag on the car, which picked up a bit of straight-line speed. The car really wasn't competitive with a Norma. So hats off to to MLT Motorsports, and also to Performance Tech in particular, for being competitive on most of the races with the Norma. So a good year for Dakota Dickerson. Just the one win, but it could have been more than that if it had a more competitive car.
Only three teams took a win this year, by my reckoning. The guys who won the championship, Navin Rao and the UK Matthew Bell from the northeast of England, well, they were only out of the podium positions once, with two wins, 2 seconds and a third. Superb run for them this year, Cher. Navin Rao, impressive. Driving has improved over the last few years since we've seen him in some of the these Challenger Championships.
Yeah, can I just put this out there right now? I love Navin Rao. If for nothing else, the fire suits and the liveries. This is a guy who is so creative. He's a big Star Wars fan. He started racing back, I believe it was Ferrari Challenge a while ago, and his driving has come on leaps and bounds, but clearly he's found a comfort zone with the cars this year. And yes, having that British ace up your sleeve doesn't hurt either, with Matt Bell, a guy who has made no secret about his love for racing in America. This was the first opportunity that he got to really flex those muscles, and boy, did he ever. Only the one race, as you said, where they weren't on the podium. This was the picture of consistency for Matt Bell and Navin Rao, and they both held their own. Navin actually doing well in qualifying too, which helped set them up for the championship.
Great to see Matt Bell, young Matt Bell, Rob Bell's younger brother, although considerably taller, and he would say, of course, much more talented and faster younger brother. Great to see him getting the full season, Jeremy, and absolutely repaying the confidence shown in him. Part of the job of the senior partner here to help and mentor the driver that you're with, and Matt and Navin seem to have formed a very, very stout partnership.
Well, they really did. You know, it was Navin as the gentleman driver who always started the car. But as Shea was saying, he was magnificent in qualifying. He was on the front row of the grid in every race except for Mid-Ohio, where he started fourth. So that was pretty stout. The final race of the year, started from the pole position, led it very, very convincingly through the early stages. So no doubt Navin Rao and Matt Bell were worthy champions. And to your point there, you know, people like Matt Bell and Scott Andrews, they've been driving these LMP3 cars in Europe as well as in North America. And it was great to see them both have an opportunity to drive in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship towards the end of the year. And hopefully that will continue for years to come. The other big factor, I think, for Bobby Golosinski's K2R team was the race engineer, John Dick, who's been around this sport a long, long, long time, particularly in the IndyCars, where he kind of made his name. But it's a well-organized organization. Driving was excellent, and a very comfortable at the end team championship there for Navin Rao, Matt Bell, and K2R Motorsports.
That's Jeremy Shawshire. Adam is with me, John Hindhoff, as well, as we look back at the Challenger Series for the IMSA 2020 season.
which brings us to the Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge USA by Yokohama. The last time we'll be talking about that series, more of that in a moment. Also the last time that we will be talking about the 991 Series 1 cars, Generation 1 cars, as they won't be part of the championship for next year. That was what we called the Gold Cup for this year. That's where we'll start. And this was a super season for the ultimate champion, Kurt Swearingen. Although it looked like for a while after Rhodes Atlanta the first time around, Jeremy, there was a little bit of a wobble, and Efren Castro started just to look like he might be able to pull back the points differential. But it's very, very hard because the difference between those points in all of these categories are so small.
Yeah, and it was really, you know, what it boiled down to was Efren Castro made more mistakes than Kurt Swearingen. And it was the ACI Motorsports entry of Kurt who ended up with the champions' laurels at the end of the season. Efren Castro driving for TPC, he was often fast, more pole positions in the Gold Cup category than Kurt, but he didn't have the consistency, and it was that won out for Kurt Swearingen. But a super battle between those two. They were both, you know, right on the ragged edge. There were teammates in 2019, not quite so close this season, I gather. It was quite a rivalry that built up as the year went on. There were a few incidents between them as well, which didn't go down terribly well. But it was a fun championship. There weren't enough cars in Gold Cup this season, but those two put up a heck of a battle.
I enjoyed watching Richard Edge as well in the blue car. He pulled out a couple of decent results and picked his way through the platinum field. Bart Collins and Kurt Fizikas were the two other drivers in gold. ACI Motorsports took the championship, as Jeremy mentioned, ahead of TPC, MCR, and unusually, Kelly Moss Road and Race at the bottom of the standings, which we don't often say, if truth be told. So for 2021, it becomes, or there is a new championship actually. It's going to be Porsche Carrera Cup North America. New tyre supplier Michelin bringing it into line with the other Carrera Cups around the world. A new car in the 992 GT3 Cup, the 993R, the GT3R. That's a big wide-bodied car, different sized wheels, diameter wheels, front and back, which is quite unusual for Porsches as well in the modern era. But there will be a number of supplementary classes, including one for the Gen 2 cars, which made up this year's Platinum class, which was a long way of me getting round to the front of the field this year. There'll also be Young Driver Awards and effectively a Porsche Carrera Cup North America Young Driver Academy as well. All very exciting for next year. But for this year, we'll start with the Masters category share in the Platinum class, and the 99 iFly car. It was Alan Metney who took that championship from Charlie Luck, Michael Minella, and David Brulé Sr., and then Frank Razzo, Joseph Lombardo. A decent spread of drivers who are still racing for the enjoyment of it, as we were mentioning before.
Yes, and due to a bad weekend for Alan Metney at, where was that? Road Atlanta. I think it was the second time that we raced at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. Mm. Alan Metney's championship came a little bit into peril with Charlie Luck, who actually drove very well this year. But Metney, six times on the overall podium, including that fabulous overall win at VIR. It was his championship to lose the whole way through. And he really hit another gear this year. And I don't know how many times we can keep saying that about Alan Metney, because every time he's in a Porsche, he's just impressing all of us.
First time since 2013 that someone from the Masters had won overall. And Alan did put a good season together. Charlie Luck had none for quite large parts of the season, Jeremy. And actually, his results, I'm not sure they really tell the story of Charlie's season in the Masters category.
No, I think that's a fair comment. You know, Alan Metney, you know, he takes his racing super seriously, and was you know, start off the season absolutely superbly, as Shay was saying. You know, four podiums, overall podiums from the first four races. He didn't get on the podium again, ironically, until the final races of the season at Sebring, which was slightly strange. He had a sort of, you know, by his standards, by his current standards, Alan Metney, a somewhat mediocre sort of second, third of the championship, if you like.
The middle part of the season.
But he came back, the middle part of the season, but certainly came on strong again at the end. He did make a couple of mistakes, and Charlie Luck took advantage of that to win four races in a row in the Masters class, including a sweep of all three races at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. The only other Masters class winner this year was Michael Minella, who's also an interesting story. He's made a comeback of sorts, and had the one win. He took advantage of a problem for Alan Metney at Mid-Ohio to win one of the races. A well-deserved first win there in the Masters class for Michael Minella. But yeah, Alan Metney certainly was the class of the field. But for Charlie, I think he was kind of demoralized for part of the year by Metney's performances. But at the end of the season, as Shay was saying, he came on strong and had some good runs towards the end, and four wins on the season. I think that bodes well for next year if he comes back to race in the Carrera Cup.
And we should mention that the Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge USA by Yokohama was probably one of the least affected races. All right, it's championships. It started late, but my goodness me, Jeremy, they got their rounds in, didn't they?
Yeah, 16 races through the season. Yeah, who'd have thunk it? And in fact, it was a really interesting year, I think, for the series. The good news. Well, there was lots of good news, but the season was supposed to start out at St. Petersburg, on the streets of St. Petersburg, for the very, very first time. The cars were there. They actually ran a practice session, but didn't get a chance to race because that was when the stuff hit the fan, so to speak, in terms of the pandemic, and the meeting was called off after the first practice sessions. But they did get a chance to go back to St. Pete later in the year. So yeah, that was, a bit of a turning point in terms of the championship, running on the street course for the first time in quite a while. I think the last time they ran on the street circuits was in Toronto in Canada.
27 drivers, Shea has done the arithmetic, who took at least one start in the championship this year. It's a mark of how much Alan Metney was at the sharp end of the field in winning the Masters category in the Platinum class, that he finished fourth overall in the standings, one place ahead of a former Gold Cup champion, Sebastian Carrazzo. Sebastian stepping up into Platinum. Now, did he do that part the way through last year, or was this his first year, full year in Platinum? For Sebastian, he confused first me by changing his car colour part way through the season as well. First full year, was it, Shea?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, okay. Yes, thank you.
Last year was his first season of racing, effectively.
Yes, yeah, and yeah. He did very well indeed. I don't think he'd be too disappointed seeing his fifth in the championship, Shea. That doesn't sound great, but actually the way he raced this year was pretty good. He's still clearly learning a lot. Got involved in an accident at St. Pete's. But 406 points on the season. Another couple of slightly better finishes might have pushed him up above Alan, but I'm not sure. He might have got somewhere named Sean McAllister, but fifth on the season. Sebastian, when you look at these races, what do you reckon?
He definitely should have been fourth in the championship. He lost at a minimum, let's say, 25 points by not starting the second round at St. Pete after that, what was quite a big hit into the wall at
turn three.
Mm. Yeah. So that was definitely the thing that moved him further down in the championship for this season. But Sebastian is a guy who made his first racing steps into the GT3 Cup Challenge a couple years ago at Watkins Glen, and actually wrote the car off in a practice session. The car had to then go away from the track to get refitted to be able to drive again. He managed to then start the second race of the weekend at Watkins, back with NGT, remember all of that happening a couple years ago. He bounced back from that to then go on and win the gold championship last year. So then making the step up this year was a big ask for him because it was such a different car with so much more competition.
Yeah.
I think if you'd asked Sebastian at the beginning of the year, are you going to be happy with the top five finish in the championship? He would have said no. Hmm. I think if you ask him now if he's happy with the top five finish, he would say, well, no, but there's more hesitancy because yes. he's seen the competition level.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that.
And it was difficult for Sebastian because he was planning originally on continuing with NGT Motorsports, which he'd run the past season and a half, you know, with some success. And he was only 22 years of age now, but again, he was taking his racing seriously. He was, of ample build before this season. And he went on a strict training exercise. Ramiz Wahib from NGT, you know, was saying, look, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this properly. And Sebastian was all on board with that. You know, lost a lot of weight over the winter, was very trim and ready to go for the first race of the season. And then, of course, it didn't happen at St. Petersburg. And after that, the NGT team, Ramiz was on the fringes of retiring in any case. That was the final straw for him. So he was out. So Sebastian switched across to Kelly Moss for when the season actually resumed in person. So he hadn't really run with that team before. So, you know, it was a very steep learning curve for him to get used to new procedures with that different team. So, you know, it was a really good first year, I think, for Sebastian. And, you know, four podium finishes was certainly, a good solid season for him the first year at this level. But that's, as Shane was saying, you know, that crash at St. Pete was a big one. And that's why, of course, he was running different colours, different car for the final races of the season at Sebring.
Yeah, 3/3 and a second, as Jeremy said on that. Alan Metney, the Masters winner, fourth place in the championship. Don't forget the Masters runners were allowed, in fact were mandated to have the ABS option ticked on their GT3 Cup car. So there were times when Alan had a little bit of an advantage in the machinery. That said, you've still got to point in the right direction and you've still got to put yourself in the right position. And I think, you know, Alan fourth in the championship, he might be a bit disappointed with that. Yes, he's taken the Masters Championship. I had the feeling he was looking at loftier heights this year, Jeremy. Obviously, the win at second VIR, wasn't it, will be the highlight of his season. Got on the podium, another four or five times, the overall podium as well. He'll be happy, but we'll still be thinking, if only, I think, a couple of times this year.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you started off the year with a pair of overall podium finishes at Road America. Then the first race at VIR, he finished second, but set the fastest lap of the race. And that set him up for race two at VIR, where because of that, he started from the pole position, led the whole way. And so, you know, at that point of the season, he was right in contention for the overall championship. After that, he kind of, you know, was a little bit more conservative, I think, at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta for the first two visits there, finished fourth. And it wasn't until right at the end of the year he was back up running with the overall leaders again. But, you know, again, an excellent year for somebody who's not a professional racing driver. And he was unfortunately this year, I think entries were certainly down on where they have been in years past, not so many cars as we kind of used to in the GT3 Cup Challenge, primarily as a result of COVID, I think. But still, you know, Alan Metney did a good job. And as you say, the first man since Craig Jewerson, who's the only other driver also at Road America, at Road America, I should say, back in, as you said, in 2013, the only other Masters driver to have won a race overall.
Top three in the championship then, as we look back at the IMSA Challenge Series for 2020 in this special programme from IMSA Radio and the Radio Show Limited network of channels. Sean McAllister, third position share, 446 points, a little way away from our top two, and just ahead of Alan by 13 points. JDX with the Shell sponsored car for Sean was very quick off the start from wherever he had qualified.
Often, though, or a few times, should I say, didn't seem to be able to turn those into results. Did get on the podium, a raft of third positions, but nothing better than that.
Well, and to be honest, when I was talking about Alan Metney in the Masters Championship and said he got to the overall podium six times, and that was remarkable because he was a Masters driver, for Sean McAllister, he made it to the overall podium six times. Mm. And that's a disappointment because the two guys that he was chasing in the championship, between the two of them, were only off the podium twice.
Yeah.
So when you're stepping into this role, all right, first year in these cars, it was a very big step for Sean. But this is somebody who came in with the allure, and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he win the Hurley Haywood scholarship for this year? Mm. So there was a bit more expectation from young McAllister, and reality did set in through the first four races of the season, not even getting a podium. That definitely had to be eye-opening.
You've got to say, though, Jeremy, you picked a bad year to come in here when you've got not just one, but two really, really impressive drivers. We've often seen this category being dominated by a single driver and everybody else is scrapping for second position. This year, it was two drivers who pretty much vacuumed up everything at the sharp end of the field. And Sean, for a lot of the time, Sean had fairly quiet races if he was finishing those six times in third.
Yeah, and to show you how quickly time flies, it was last year that he won the Hurley Haywood Scholarship, Sean. So this is his sort of second full season with the JDX team, Jeremy Dale and Harrison Bricks. And you know, he worked hard at his craft. He was it was some ways disappointed, but he certainly made progress during the year, and he was much more competitive overall towards the end. Still a few mistakes for Sean. You know, he's not quite on the level of those top two who really were a class apart in 2020.
Yeah, and good to see the JDX car competitive as well against the teams who have multiple entries. More Speed is a team that we've been used to seeing in this championship for a very, very many years, Jeremy. And Riley Dickinson, their driver, was in second position in the championship. And some of the comments that I've just made about Sean McAllister, you could also apply to Riley. You know, he didn't have a bad year. He didn't drive badly, but he came up against someone who was absolutely on top of their form. And, you know, 514 points across the season is pretty decent. Any other year, you might have thought he would have won a championship.
Well, certainly, no, that was a goal coming in. I mean, he's still only 18 years of age, Riley Dickinson.
Scary,
he was 18,
isn't it?
Yeah, 18 in May. So, you know, it was his second year at this level. He ended up last year with a win, his first win at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta at the end of 2019. So he certainly came in to 2020 with very high expectations, working again with David Moore at Moore Speed, the Texas team there, Riley himself from Texas. He certainly ended up the year a little bit disappointed. Just the four wins on the year for Riley, he reckoned there was more in there than that. Made a few mistakes, perhaps didn't maximize exactly what he had. But again, for just his second year of racing, you know, that's pretty stout. And he came across a buzzsaw there in Jeff Kingsley, who is he's only a couple of years older. He's 22 years of age now, is Jeff, but he has a lot more racing experience under his belt. He did a few years of open wheel racing, particularly in F1600 up in Canada. He's raced these cars all season, you know, last couple of years as well. So a lot of experience, and joining that Kelly Moss team, you know, it's going to be awfully difficult to beat. Jeff Kingsley, more often than not, was the man in the championship this year.
Yeah, I think Riley, there was a little bit of, on a couple of occasions, Jeremy, I seem to remember a bit maybe of tyre management that he didn't quite do as well as Jeff. And Jeff didn't have very many bad weekends, to be honest. And, you know, even if he did make a mistake, quite often Riley wasn't close enough to be able to take advantage. I mean, an extraordinary season for Jeff Kingsley, Shea, who did both the US and the Canadian Championship last year and only got one win. Certainly put that to rights this year.
Yeah, he was compensating for what happened last year when Roman DeAngelis beat him in not one, but two Porsche GT3 Cup Championships. But yes, Jeff Kingsley, you read his results on this year, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-1-1, 2-1-1-1, 2-1. And you think, okay, there's a computer programmer out there who's having a little bit of fun and just swapping out twos for zeros. It certainly was a performance this year. And those races where Kingsley finished second, you almost got the feeling that he was okay with that. He wasn't going to risk losing the additional points over maybe getting a win. So it was a very calculated season by the young Canadian from Ajax. And I look forward to seeing what he does in the next step of cars, because he already took that part of the way through this year running with the Compass McLaren. He's a guy who adapts very well to GT3 machinery and not just GT3 Porsches.
Jeff Kingsley's results sounding like someone doing a sound check over a PA system. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-1-1-1. Kelly Moss Road and Race are a super organisation, Jeremy. They win the team's championship again this year, and they've found another little superstar here, haven't they, in Jeff Kingsley, who, it wasn't a faultless season, but in one-make racing, in particularly in Porsche racing, which is always so competitive, it was pretty close to it.
Well, it was, you know, five consecutive pole positions to round out the year for Jeff Kingsley, converted all but one of them into a win. And this is the fifth championship for Kelly Moss since the series began back in 2005, a total of 71 wins, overall wins. Wow. For Kelly Moss. So, you know, by far the most experienced and a successful team. And Jeff Kingsley, you know, he knew the opportunity he'd been given here to step up into that children's hospital car, and he absolutely grasped the opportunity with both hands. Yeah, the first part of the year was probably a little bit closer between himself and Ryan Dickinson, but the latter part of the year, the confidence just built and built and built, and Jeff Kingsley was really tough to beat and was only done so once in those final five races. So yeah, very well-deserved championship, but certainly Riley pushed him close.
You're right, Jeremy. We could have done with a few more cars, but we always have plenty of action. There is something I still find mildly heartwarming and just settles me into a race day to hear the flat sixes getting fired up. They tended to be either first or last in a day, sometimes both, depending on how the schedule was running. And of course, Porsches and endurance racing and sports car racing go hand in glove. There's our whistle stop look at the 2020 Challenge Series for IMSA. We'll add another manufacturer, or at least welcome back a manufacturer for 2021 as the Mazda MX-5 Cup comes back under the IMSA sanctioning body, Shane. You and I have talked about that in the past, and that's going to leave us even more breathless, something more to look forward to.
I am so excited for this. I can't hide it. The Mazda MX-5 Cup, it's just phenomenal racing through and through. And to think that we welcome them back on the high banks of Daytona International Speedway. Oh my goodness. Get your popcorn ready. It's going to be a show.
And Jeremy, Mazda continuing with their Mazda Road to 24 and a $200,000 scholarship for the winner of that. That adds a little bit of spice as well to a championship that really lacks for nothing in terms of competitiveness. And in some ways, coming back to a sports car sanctioning body, in some ways, that MX-5, the Global MX-5 Cup presented by BF Goodrich Tyres, in some ways it's coming home, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it is. And the early signs for next year are super promising. We've already had quite a few driver announcements, some good youngsters coming in as well, some veterans to be in the mix. It's going to be a tremendous season for that championship. You know, it's provided fabulous racing, particularly, I think, since the new generation car was brought in a couple of years ago. But I think it's going to be stepped up several notches for 2021.
Well, rest assured you won't miss a moment of the Mazda, the Global Mazda MX-5 Cup on IMSA Radio, on its sound and vision, as well as all of the Challenge Series are. Thank you very much indeed to Shane and Jeremy for joining me here and for their work across the season. And we'll add Brian Till into that, and Johnny Palmer, who jumped in
for a couple of rounds as well, helping us out. Proof if proof were needed that endurance racing and sports cars aren't just about the top of the billing. Keep going down the ticket. You'll always find something interesting to watch and to listen to. And we'll have it all for you in 2021 on RS2, the home of IMSA Radio. Have a great 2021 and hopefully we'll see you at a racetrack.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.